Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Eat Local New York podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Tringale. And today I am talking to David and Richard from Dos Gabachos Mezcal. Well, I'm so excited to be putting out a brand new episode today of the Eat Local New York podcast. You know, it's been a few weeks, and I think I mentioned it in the last episode. I have been in the process of packing up the old studio and moving into this new space that I am currently sitting in here in Eastwood. That's right. I've been downtown in the Delavan Center for the last 5 years and finally had this awesome opportunity to move out here to Eastwood, move into a much larger space. And so I'm in the process of doing that. The past few weeks of packing up the old space and then now moving over here, and then now we're in the essentially the middle of the build out of the new space, or limited build out, but getting it ready. And you know, I'm happy to say that the plan here in this new space is to create two different podcast sets, and a bar set and a kitchen set and sort of a gaming set, a little photography studio, and to, you know, begin offering the services of podcasting for others that are interested. You know, over the past like year, I'd say I've been contacted by about a dozen people who have asked me, hey, can you, you know, help us record and produce our podcast? And for the most part, that answer has always been no, because my former studio was so small that it really, there was space for my set and my stuff, and that was it. And so I'm excited that, you know, building this space out, I'll be able to offer that to people who are interested. So stay tuned to social media if you follow on Instagram or Facebook for Eat Local New York, because I'll be posting that we're going to, once we get everything built out and opened up, we're going to have an open house and invite everybody out to hang out and have some beers and see the new space. So, well, I'm thrilled to be putting this episode out. I've been sitting on it for like the last month and a half or 2 months. Richard, who's a Liverpool guy, grew up here in Syracuse, went to Liverpool High School, reached out to me a few months back and was just telling me a story and telling me, you know, he's from Syracuse and had started this Mezcal brand and was going to be in town. And so we had him on the podcast, and I'm thrilled to have sat down and talked to him and David, because it was a really fun conversation. It's not too often that you get to meet somebody who's started their own Mezcal company. So it's really interesting. And, you know, I've always been a fan of Mezcal, but I haven't really known enough about the different varieties or brands out there to be able to really jump into it as much as I would have wanted to. And, you know, around, you don't really see too many, at least I haven't encountered or heard of too many, you know, small batch Mezcals out there. Most of them are like from the big companies that I've seen. So I have to say, you know, sipping on this Mezcal during the podcast with David and Richard was just absolutely wonderful. I mean, really, really great Mezcal, incredibly smooth, not overpowering. I mean, just sipping this neat is such a treat. And yeah, so I highly recommend anyone who's listening to this to go out and find it. They mention a few different bars and restaurants around town where you can find the Mezcal, places like XO Taco, Elephant and the Dove out in Skinny Atlas. They have just signed up and brought on a bunch of cases. And I'm excited to say Harvey's Garden, where I help out and do some of the social media and event planning. Harvey's Garden is also now carrying the Mezcal. So definitely stop out there and check it out, or any of those local places. But anyways, really interesting conversation. Great to talk to these guys, get their perspective. They're based in LA right now, and so it's really interesting to kind of talk to two people that are from a much larger food scene, a much larger bar scene, and kind of hear some of the stuff of what's going on out there. But again, to hear their story of like how they got started with this, how they had the idea, and then going through that process of actually finding, you know, figuring it out, and then making the Mezcal and getting it bought and all that kind of stuff. It's just a blast. So I feel so passionate about this Mezcal and how good it is. And I just think it's such a cool story that these two friends were able to start this company, that I'm doing my best to help them get it in as many restaurants and bars that where it fits. here in Syracuse and Central New York. So if you're interested in that, hit them up on their website. I've got the link in the show notes. But also, you can send me an email, anthony@eatlocalnewyork.com, and I can make the connections because it's just such a phenomenal product. All right. I am so excited to be back here with the podcast. Got this episode coming out, and we've got another one coming out next week that I was able to sit down with an Instagrammer from Fairport. So I'm excited to be putting that out and then just start booking out new shows from there. We've got a bunch that are already scheduled here in the next couple weeks, and I think you're going to like them. If you're following over on social media, definitely check us out on Instagram if you're not, because I am just starting today. Actually, it was my first trip out. I'm doing my annual search for the best tacos in Central New York, and then this year I'm doing a limited search out in Rochester. Not really crowning like an official winner out in Rochester as much as I am just going out to check out all the amazing places that have been recommended to me. But yeah, it's something I've been doing now for the last 4 years here in Syracuse and Central New York, trying to find the best tacos. It's something that I really enjoy, doing because I really like tacos. And so this, you know, it's the same thing as the last 2 years. There's a birria category and a non-birria category. And, you know, the fun part about this and the not fun part about it this year is there haven't been any new taco developments in Syracuse or Central New York. Like, I already know who the top producers are of the best tacos in Syracuse. And so that's kind of the not fun part because I kind of already know who's going to win. But I'm still going out and trying all of them just to see if there's anything out there that has popped up that I don't know about. But anyways, so I already know kind of who's going to win. But my first trip out today was Mamacita's. Really, really great tacos. They're kind of expensive. I think I paid $20 for three tacos and a Coke, which I thought was a lot. But really flavorful, delicious tacos. They were the birria that they do on Thursdays. And the place was packed, so if you haven't been out there, definitely get out there and check them out. All right, I want to shout out our sponsor for this podcast and every podcast, Brown Carbonic. Listen, they put the fizz in your biz. Family-owned and operated, multiple generations, and they are servicing the food service, hospitality, bar industries with just about anything that you need for your restaurant to offer beverages, from craft sodas and beverages and ice machines and dish machines, to even your gas supply for your draft beer system. And you breweries who are listening, you definitely should be working with Brown Carbonic. Reach them at 315-454-3591 or online at browncarbonic.com and make sure that you tell them you heard about them right here on the Eat Local New York podcast. All right, well, without further ado, here is my conversation with David and Richard from Dos Gabachos.
You know, you see some great cocktail spots pop up, mm-hmm. or, you know, these new restaurants. What was the one I'm trying to remember? I think I was talking to you about it. The restaurant that just popped up in Hanover Square, right over near where Manhattan's was. It's like a little spot.
Eden.
Eden.
Eden's exceptional.
Great spot.
Yeah.
And phenomenal. Like when you're in there, just you don't feel like you're in Cuse. You know,
no.
It's like,
yeah.
You know, I love that. And it's good to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Eden is without a doubt the best restaurant in Syracuse, no question. I mean, 100% wood-fired kitchen,
yeah.
Which I tell people that, like, whenever I own, as a separate business, I own a food tour, so we do give walking food tours around downtown in the summer, and then the number one question, what's your favorite? I'm like, the best is Eden. There's no, and I'm like, it's 100% wood-fired restaurant. And everybody looks at me is like,
yeah.
Like, they have to build a fire in their kitchen every night,
yeah.
To heat, to cook your food.
Yeah.
This one group, they were like, what are you talking about? They have to build a fire.
Yeah.
So I called the chef, owner and chef Rich. I was like, are you in the restaurant right now? He's like, yeah. I was like, I'm bringing five people over to show them your restaurant real quick.
Yeah.
And they were astounded by it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something, you know, that, you know, that's definitely a trend all over the, you know, pops up in major cities around the country, right? Wood-fired kitchens. But he's doing it, you know, really, really well.
Yeah.
And it was cool. I mean, he built out the entire restaurant from like by himself, you know, with limited help. I mean, built the line, built the bar. I mean, it's just crazy the amount of effort that that Rich has put into stuff.
Yeah, but, food is great for sure. Yeah. He did a good job.
And local. I mean,
yeah,
we did. I did a video last year, and we're going to follow the trend this year. And that is, I follow food from the farm to it being processed to go into the restaurant, and then the restaurant cooking with it.
Cool.
And so last year, I started the series out with a chicken.
Mm-hmm.
It was at this local farm in Truxton, husband and wife. You know, infants that they've got like strapped to their back as they're like processing chickens. You know, the husband is going up to the trailer and like saying a prayer over the chickens and, you know, before like thanking God for the, you know, for the animal sacrifice before he process. I mean, that kind of a, you know, local farm, sustainable. They've got cows, they have pigs, they've got egg layers and meat birds. And so I hung out with them as they were slaughtering and processing their chickens one morning and filmed it. And then went to Eden, who buys their chickens, and filmed a video with their sous chef cooking one of the dishes with the chicken. So this year that we're I'm doing that with a pig. I'm doing that with a cow, possibly with a duck if there's any. I know there's like local duck eggs. And then, you know, a variety of like produce to love just kind of show that whole process.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? It's good for people to see, you know?
Yeah. So. And those are the things that upstate New York excels at.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there's so many different wonderful local farms,
yes,
you know, whether it's protein or produce, the winemakers and, you know, the Finger Lakes region, all that kind of stuff. It's great, you know, so.
I was explaining that to David a little bit just because he's, you know, he's from the Bay Area. So he's, you know, he grew up around Napa.
Yeah.
So that's the best way for me to, you know, kind of explain. It's like a mini, you know, definitely not on the same scale as Napa, but, you know, it has that feel for the East Coast at least, you know, the Finger Lake region is beautiful. And then us spending time out in Skinny Atlas a little bit today, even though I didn't get to show him, you know, the lake, and it's not summertime when it's really popping, but still you get a vibe. It's just it's a different, it's kind of a different vibe from, you know, what you get. You know, sent like right in downtown or
For sure.
Yeah.
Skinny Atlas is maybe the best of us. I'd like to think, you know, Skinny Atlas is great, especially the summertime. My family's been going out there when, you know, growing up, we never vacationed in like Disney. We went to Skinny Atlas. And so we've had lake houses out there and all that kind of stuff for years. So, Skinny Atlas is really great.
Yeah. It is a beautiful area.
Some great food. I don't think there's, I mean, Hidden Fish is going to be like the nicest thing that's out there.
Yeah.
You know, so Hidden Fish was really, really good. Sushi chef, you know, whatever they call a sushi chef, phenomenal, really cool. Food was great. Nothing like that in central New York, really. I'm sure you guys have got obviously a lot of that in LA. And I've always tried to follow Bourdain's rule of if you can't see the ocean, don't order fish.
Huge fan of Anthony.
But it was really good. And their bartender, I hate to call him a bartender, mixologist, I forget his name, but really off the wall character from New Orleans.
Interesting.
And I mean, we were sitting there at the bar having dinner, and the way they've got it set up is they've got like 80% of the bar, the counter space is for the like food preparation, right, with the chef. And then the rest of it is the mixologist, who's still like right up in the front. And so we were sitting right there in his corner. And so we were chatting with him, and you know, we were like, are you from the area? And he was like, no, I just moved up from New Orleans a month ago. A friend of mine said there was some cool opportunities out here in the Finger Lakes, so I decided to come up. He's like, it was good timing because my girlfriend had just broken up with me. And next thing I know, there was like four guns pointed at my head. And I was like, if that isn't a New Orleans story, I don't know.
For sure.
I was like, that's somebody that's from New Orleans for
sure. Yeah, he's not going to be too happy that, you know, these couple of months, but when it's a little colder, but summertime, I'm sure it'll.
Yeah, but he was making some great cocktails.
Nice.
Some really great cocktails out there. And
love that.
Yeah, and definitely on the higher end price points for sure.
I'll have to try to talk to Adam once it gets kind of moving in Elephant the Dove, you know, and see what we can do with Hidden Fish, maybe even crabs, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, all those places. We'll chat afterwards. I mean, I've you know, I could give you a whole list of spots to hit up in Syracuse that are, you know, legit. So
for sure, appreciate that.
Well, why don't we pour some mezcal?
Yeah.
And while you're doing that, why don't you guys introduce yourselves to everybody?
Okay. My name is Richard Policastro. This is David Martin to the left of me. So David and I met at the – we started bartending together at the JW Marriott Ritz-Carlton in LA Live right across from the Staples Center.
Okay.
And I'm actually from – I'm from Syracuse originally, so I went to Liverpool High School. I moved out to Los Angeles 15 years ago. Wanted to escape the winters. That was really it. You know, I just wanted to try something different. My parents always said, you know what, if it doesn't work out, you can always come back. You know, 15 years later, you know, here we are. So, but we met bartending together at the JW and Ritz-Carlton, and we met our third partner, who is now our third partner. He was just a bar patron, just, you know, would come in all the time. His name is Victor. He's from Mexico City. Mm. So just over the time of him coming in, talking to us, telling us stories about Mexico, and then, you know, eventually got to the point where he would say, you know, I would love to take you guys there sometime and show you around. And, you know, it was always on our an idea. You know, I always wanted to, you know, visit Mexico City, especially just because knowing that it was different than, you know, your Cancuns, your Cabos, your Puerto Vallartas, you know, just more of Americanized areas, more for tourists. You know, I knew that there was a lot more culture, rich culture in Mexico City. Excuse me. So we took them up on it. We went on a trip out there, and I'd safe to say it changed our lives, you know, forever. It was a magical place, just beautiful. I mean, the culture, the food, and more importantly, the mezcal. The mezcals we were tasting at the time, this was probably about 8 years ago. This was before the mezcal scene really started to pop off. You know, there was a couple of mezcals out, but nothing crazy. And the ones we were tasting behind the bar, we were just like, you know. And then we got to Mexico City and we were trying these mezcals and they were just night and day. We were like, wow, this is mezcal. This is amazing. So when we got back, I remember him and I, we got done with a shift and we were sitting in my car and he said to me, he goes, what do you think about, you know, us doing our own mezcal? And I was like, I love it, but I have no idea where to start. Where do you start, you know? And he's like, I don't know either. So he's like, let's talk to Victor and see. So the three of us just kind of got together and started Googling how to start a liquor company. And basically from there, started taking trips to Oaxaca and asking cab drivers where the palenques are. And excuse me, just started going to, you know, to different places and tasting and meet people. And then here we are now, you know, so
that's wild.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So what made you choose? I mean, obviously you're there, but what made you choose, like, you know, mezcal? Did you look at anything? Did you look at like a tequila? Did you look into, you know, bourbons or whiskeys or anything like that?
Yeah. I think just being in Mexico City, you know, like as Richard was saying, drinking all these mezcals, it was, you know, we were just blown away by how good it was. Mm-hmm. I think we just really fell in love with mezcal. And we had been drinking tequila, bourbon, gin, vodka, everything behind the bars, bartenders, right? But yeah, I think we just really fell in love with mezcal, the flavor of it. It was different.
I think the tequila market was also very saturated, yeah, too. Yeah.
That was
But I think it was a genuine love for mezcal. I mean, we like tequila. I mean, agave spirits in general.
Yeah.
But I think we... You know, when we went to Mexico City, we were drinking both, but we were both just, you know, just drawn to the flavor, the taste of mezcal. And I think learning about it was so mysterious to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I think just the complexity of the spirit. And even today, you talk to people, what's a mezcal? Oh, it's a really, really smoky tequila, you know? And then you're like, all right, you got a couple minutes to sit down and, you know, listen to us, you know?
Yeah, but seeing that, also that opportunity, like, there wasn't much to be found.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's good.
You like it?
That's really good.
Solid.
Yeah.
Cheers, man.
Yeah, solid. Cheers. Wow. Solid. Yeah. It's strong, but it's subtle. You know, it doesn't kill your palate like some mezcals do.
Yeah. So it's a 90 proof. I mean, to be honest with you, from what we have learned, and this is all from the information that we've taken in, you know, from mezcaleros around Oaxaca and, you know, the people that we've worked a lot with, but especially in big cities, Los Angeles, New York, a lot of mezcal forward agave bars won't even talk to you if your bottle is anything under 90 proof.
Really?
And the main reason is because the higher the proof, you get so much more flavor out of it. Now it's up to the mezcalero to really take that and work their magic and get it to the point where it's still strong, but doesn't taste like you're drinking gasoline, you know? But some of the best mezcals we've ever tasted are like 100 proof out of the still, just phenomenal. Like the flavor is just unlike anything else. So,
still smooth, even at that high proof.
Yeah, still smooth. So we wanted something well-balanced, something where like the mezcal enthusiast can walk into a bar and order this and sip it neat or on the rocks. But also for people who are just learning about mezcal, who this is like their first time, you know, great in a cocktail. And they can drink it in a cocktail. Because it's 90 proof, it really stands up in the cocktail and it doesn't die out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So what is the process? Because, I know there are a lot of people that just think it's, you know, smoky tequila, right?
Right.
But, there's a process to it, isn't it? Just essentially, it's kind of like, I mean, is maybe a bad analogy, but it's essentially like the equivalent of char in the oak barrel. Am I wrong?
Yeah, similar.
We always like to let people know, technically, a tequila is a form of a mezcal. So it's actually the opposite of what people think.
Yeah.
So what we like to teach, that mezcal is mezcal, tequila is tequila. They're really their own spirits. And definitely mezcal is not a tequila or a smoky tequila.
Mm-hmm.
It's, so we just always love to clarify that.
First and foremost, let's just get that out of the way. Exactly. Yeah.
Some of the differences, you know, that, well, why is it different? Same family, agave, right? They're both agave spirits. Tequila only comes from Blue Weber, where mezcals come from a lot of different species of agave. Our flagship is Espadin.
Okay.
And I would say Espadin is like the heart of mezcal. If you had to pick one species of agave to represent mezcal, I would say it's Espadin.
Mainly because it takes the least amount of time to grow to maturity. So it's the most popular. It's the most abundant, right? You know, sorry, go ahead.
So mezcal's cooked underground. That's where you do get that smokiness.
Yeah.
You get those wood notes, cause it's cooked with wood and rocks underground.
Mm.
So that's where it's getting that characteristic. So that's the, you know, tequila steamed in conventional ovens. I don't know the whole tequila process. That's probably like one of the biggest differences is how it's created, how it's produced. And they really don't taste alike. If you were to sip a tequila and sip a mezcal, like they don't really, you might catch the agave similarity, but they're very, you know, they don't completely taste alike.
Yeah. And most tequilas are all 80 proof. I mean, if you look at them, I mean, they're across the board, you know. And then if you look at a lot of really solid, good mezcals, most of them are 90, you know, 92, 96, you know, the proof is a little bit higher. There are some good mezcals that are under 90 proof, but you do lose a little bit of the flavor. I mean, and that's the goal with the mezcal, is really to get the most out of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is based on, you know, the terroir. We always say that mezcal, you can kind of compare it a lot to wine. You know, it's just, you know, a lot of the influences of what grows around it, you know, changes the flavor profile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 2019 cab somewhere in Napa, and then from the same spot, and then a 2022 could taste totally different.
Sure.
It's similar with mezcal. I mean, we're going on our fourth batch, and all three batches have slightly tasted a little bit different. And it's not about consistency. It's not really trying to do that like tequila.
Yeah.
You kind of want to show people that. You kind of want to make it like, oh, that batch one, I really loved that taste. I'm going to hold on to that bottle. You know, batch two was great too. Maybe it's a little bit more peppery. Maybe there was a wildfire near, and the ash got into the soil and it influenced the flavor a little bit, or some citrus trees, or the elevation, or the mist. That's, you know, there's a lot that can kind of tie into it that can change the flavor just subtly. And most people can't tell the difference, but you know, we can, you know, sometimes, you know, it's a little bit this or a little bit that. And it's fun. It kind of makes it, you know, the learning process of it. And, you know, we're students of the game. We're still learning, you know, every day about this business and about mezcal. So
yeah,
it's kind of what drew us to it originally, you know, just to, you know, just so much to learn about it and the complexity of it.
Yeah,
it's
for great. Sure. So is it an aged spirit, or is it essentially like cooked underground with like the wood and the rocks and then immediately put in the process?
So it's actually like, it's actually aged organically in the growth of the plant.
Okay.
So each mezcal has a different timeline of when it's taken down. Some mezcaleros like to take it down a little bit sooner than others. Some like to let it grow to its full amount. Like an Espadin is what do we say, anywhere from like 5 to 8 years, give or take. You know, a Tobalá sometimes is anywhere from 8 to 12. You know, it just depends. There's Tepestate, which is a type of mezcal, which takes like 25 years for one plant to grow to maturity.
Wow.
Which is a little bit more of a rare plant, which is why if you do find it in a bar, it's a little bit pricier, you know, because it is more rare. But, you know, where tequila, where you take it and you age it in barrels, you know, there are some mezcal brands that age it or put it in a barrel where what we've been taught is it's kind of a no-no, you know, because you're taking this beautiful, natural, organic flavor that aged on its own in the growth process, and then you're throwing it in a barrel and kind of masking that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of frowned upon a little bit, but... you know, but some people do it, you know, and I think they just do it. I mean, Americans love to see that, you know, they love to see color and, you know, different, you know, oh, it's been aged this long, so it must be phenomenal, where, you know, you can find some really good mezcals that have been aged just within the growth of the plant and they're going to taste unbelievable.
Yeah. There's a really phenomenal distillery, up here called Old Home Distillers, couple of brothers and, who have it and run it. They do a lot of whiskeys, a lot of bourbons, and they do a gin. They don't do too much clear stuff. But they just, so they're, you know, in New York State, there's the New York State Farm License that is a lot easier to acquire if you're a brewery, a distillery, or if you're a bar that's trying to get your liquor license. You know, you don't, it's not nearly as expensive. It doesn't take as long. And, but the challenge is you can only buy and sell from New York State distillers or breweries who also have that farm license.
Gotcha.
So I ran a bar, there was a partner at this bar who had a farm license, and you know, we couldn't, we were never going to get a rum. I think there is a New York State rum, but it's not very good from what I remember. But we're not going to get a tequila or a mezcal or anything like that. You know, you're really limited. So what they did is they took a whiskey and aged it in a mezcal barrel. And I forget, maybe 2 or 3 years. And the result was essentially a whiskey that had strong smoky flavor that you get from a mezcal.
Interesting.
Which, you know, kind of gave, like, you know, when you have a farm license, you look for any and every trick that you can find to,
of course,
make, to make a normal cocktail for somebody, you know, that's not an old fashioned. And and that really opened up the world of it, because it was really solid. But I think they did a barrel of it and it was gone.
It's so interesting because we're actually working on something the opposite. So there's actually some whiskey barrels that we have been playing around with that age in the mezcal. We take the agave spirit, put it into the whiskey barrels and age it for about a year.
Wow.
And we've tasted the final product and it's... I mean, we were both floored. Yeah. I mean, it's phenomenal.
And that's one. And that's our first kind of like stepping outside the traditional mezcal.
Yeah.
Because we would like, you know, we are developing some of the other species, and we do like to keep it traditional, so you get to taste what real mezcal tastes like. But this is a kind of a one off. But it, I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to. I mean, you have to have an open mind, thinking forward with, you know, some different ideas. You know, we're working on multiple expressions. I mean, obviously this is our flagship. This is what kind of got us out there and, you know, we're really pushing it. But, you know, like David said, we're working on some different species, some Tobalá, Mexicana, maybe a Pechuga, maybe a Quiche. But we're also, one of our next projects is a Mezcal Rosé. So it's actually the same Espadín plant, but aged in a red wine barrel for about 30 days, gives it a little bit of the color.
Yeah.
And it would be the same bottle, but clear.
That's cool.
So you can see the color. I just, my mixology mind is just firing on ideas.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
I really, I mean, it'd be great anyways just to sip. But I mean, the cocktails you could do with that, with like a play on like a French 75 or like something with strawberry and like, you know, even some rose water, rose petals, you know, you could really do some fun stuff with it, you know, especially for summertime.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my mind's like firing right now with a ton of ideas for the mezcal, but
right?
Remind me to talk about all these things after the fact.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, I don't know if you guys are cool with talking a little bit of like the nuts and bolts, but I'm fascinated at the process of having the idea to start your own, you know, liquor company and then the process of what that looks like, especially one where I'm assuming it's similar to like there's one place in the world that you can go to have this made essentially, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like It's not like you can go find a producer in California and go have your...
Well, if you did, it couldn't be called mezcal. It'd be like agave spirit or something like that. So to be classified as a mezcal, just like tequila, just like champagne.
Champagne.
It has to come to... Sparkling wine, For mezcal, it's 9 states, Oaxaca being the motherland.
Yeah.
To be actually classified as a mezcal.
Yeah, that's wild.
But we do know, I met a brand, I can't remember the name, nice guy. He was growing his own agave in California, and he's got an agave spirit, and it's, you know, it's not bad, you know, it's not like from Oaxaca, but it was pretty good. Like, I respect, you know, I liked his vision, you know, trying to be different.
Yeah. All right, so you go to Mexico City, and, you know, or you go to Oaxaca, and you jump into cabs and start saying, like, take me to wherever you recommend. And then, you know, what's that process like?
It's like a process of elimination. It's all networking, you know. They take us somewhere and it's the three of us, me, myself, David, and Victor. And, you know, and then we, you know, just talk to these mescaleros and just, it's the learning process begins, you know. It's just, we learn about it, we taste it, and then, you know, we get back in the cab and we're like, the three of us are like, all right, that's not for us. You know, I think the one important thing that everybody should know too is that, you know, we didn't, you know, the three of us don't come from a lot of money where we just, you know, went down there and said, okay, we'll take that one. Let's slap some labels on it and let's just start marketing it.
Yeah.
You know, we're fully funded by the three of us. We put all of our, you know, all of our hard earned money into this. And so we're genuine fans of mezcal. So we really wanted to bring something back that we would sit down at the bar and drink. So we were prepared to, we knew it was going to take some time. You know, we knew it was going to, you know, we were going to taste some bad ones. We were going to taste some good ones. We were going to taste some that maybe it didn't work out, and some that were really good that made the decision hard. But it was a process. It was a lengthy process. It was a lot of trips to Oaxaca. Had to jump through a lot of hoops because, especially coming out with a spirit that is from Mexico, you have to do a lot of, you know, there's a lot of legal paperwork in Mexico. There's a lot of paperwork here in the States. You know, you have to almost mirror everything. So it was definitely a lot of work. But we finally came across the Martinez family, and Abel is our, you know, he's our mezcalero, and he's a little bit younger, and we love the idea of kind of growing with somebody with us, you know, his mezcal is just phenomenal from the second we tasted it, and we loved the palenque, and we loved the family, and it took some time, but we felt like when we tasted it, we all looked at each other and we're like, this is it. Yeah.
So is it you find your, you know, you find your grower, essentially, you find your producer, and they're growing and distilling? Or are those two separate people?
Ultimately, yes. So like Abel, they grow the agave as well. There could be other scenarios, you know. I know there's some bigger brands that they probably, they're mescalero, like maybe they only have so much capacity, so then they have to source from other places, other people. Yeah. A lot of people out there, they just sell agave. But ultimately, you know, you find your producer.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of them are providing they're growing the agave.
Yeah. And I think like take Del Maguey, for example, you know, I don't know how familiar you are with his you know, his expressions and stuff, but he has a lot of single village. Which means that, you know, it's coming from that village. That's, you know, if it's not single village, it means it could be outsourced from a couple other villages to come to, you know, if they need to, you know, maybe there's a shortage, or you need to, maybe you're just buying a lot and you need to kind of blend it together, which is totally fine. It's a great flavor, but when you can do a single village, which like he has Chichicapa and a couple different Tobalas and a couple different Espadines, you know, but specifically from that village, you know, it makes it a little bit more, it's a rarer type of, you know, spirit that you're coming out with, because the abundance of it is only goes so far. But it's interesting. It's kind of cool just to, you know, to see how you have to, I mean, it's even like that with winemaking. Sometimes winemakers need to borrow grapes from a farm, you know, or a vineyard a little bit further down the road or something like that, you know,
it's very similar,
but you embrace that and you tell your customers what you have. And it's kind of fun because then it's like, oh, this batch is different. It comes not only from Santo Domingo Albaradas, but over here in Chichicapa or from Amatitlan or like wherever it may be, you know. Yeah. And it's just, it makes it, you know, that batch a little bit different. As you can see on our bottle, I mean, we, you know, we have, you know, batch number, you know, we have the bottle number, the, you know, the year it's grown in, and then on the side, you know, the type of still and, you know, the Mescalero and everything like that. So as we continue to evolve, if we have different types of expressions or if it comes from a different source, you know, we're going to include that. I mean, there are some brands that don't even talk about their Mescalero, which is kind of crazy to us because they put so much hard work and effort and sweat into this. You know, and you wanna give them props for it because they do such an amazing job. And until you can actually go there and see how they do it, it's hard to, you know, really give them the respect that they deserve. You know, so it's great to kind of see that.
Yeah, it's important to us to make sure that we give Abel and his family like credit they deserve. Yeah, like he was saying, something about single. I'm not going to say single village because, you know, but you're getting agaves from it's
because he has that trademark.
For when you're getting a like ours, you know, our agave comes from Santo Domingo Arboradas. Abel makes it. You can trace to it. That's I think it's more unique, and those tend to be a little more pricey because rather than like you got a bunch of agaves coming from all these areas that you don't know, almost. You know, maybe this is really like layman's terms, like a blended scotch versus like a single malt.
For sure.
Maybe that's not the best example.
Yeah.
And I'm not like hating on that because like you said, you can still get some amazing mezcal, but a lot of the commercial brands, like that's kind of how they're rocking.
Right.
They don't really, you know, like they don't even name their mezcaleros. You don't really know where the agave is coming from.
So it's kind of just a mezcal, you know?
And those, some of those are not something that great.
Yeah, something for the listeners to understand. You know, if you're going and you're looking to pick out a bottle, like if you really want to get into mezcal and you want to try a good product, you know, it should talk about the mezcalero.
Right.
It should say where it's from and the region and the still it's made from. And, you know, you should see that information on there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one, you know, tip out there for people that are looking to, you know, go out there and buy a bottle.
Yeah, I've talked to a couple people just like, hey, I've got these guys coming to the podcast. They started a mezcal company and a little bit. And, you know, the people that I've spoken to from like the liquor world who understand a little bit about it, they're like, you know, the only thing that we don't like about mezcal is there's not much transparency. Like you don't see as much transparency. It was kind of funny that they made this as you do in tequila. But tequilas nowadays, I mean, there's been a bigger movement over the last like year and a half or two about, you know, actually finding great tequilas and not the stuff that's just crammed full of, you know, whatever. You know, so that is, so I mean, that's been great to see, but they're like, but you don't see a lot of transparency in the mezcal world. So that's really cool that you're putting all that information, you're introducing people to them, you know? And so it's, you know, it's, and the bourbon and in bourbon, you know, it, almost anybody can just go buy MPG, you know, whatever distilled and then barrel age it themselves, you know, bottle it themselves, do their whole thing. And so, you know, usually on the back of a bourbon label, if you're seeing like distilled in Indiana, bottled in wherever the hell, you know, that's usually what you're getting.
Yeah.
And while that still can be fine bourbon, and adequate bourbon, you know, there's just something about knowing, hey, this is the person that actually, you know, distilled the entire thing themselves and aged it and bottled it, you know, and, yeah, and it doesn't sound like it's completely different, it sounds like, in the mezcal world. It's not like you just go buy, like, I'm going to go get, you know, my liquid from you, and I'm just going to do whatever I want with it.
Yeah, no, it's really important to give them credit, for sure. I mean, it's like that, again, with, like, wines, too. You know, it's, you know, you want to, sometimes it's cool to see who the winemaker is and, you know, to read up a little bit about it, whether it's family-owned or multi-generational or, you know, their grandfather was a big winemaker or something like that. Yeah, pour us up, David.
Yeah. Listen, I've had a guest in the podcast, Joel. I don't think you're listening, but Joel and his fiance Natalie and their chef. I used to have him on once a month, a local restaurant here in Syracuse. And I had bought this bottle of Howlerhead bourbon for some reason, or whiskey for some reason. You know, yeah, Dana White's banana flavor.
Yes, yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And I hate it. I absolutely hate it.
I know.
And so we were recording at like 9 a.m. on a Saturday. And so we're doing the podcast, and I had these bottles out. And Joel's like, I was telling him how bad it was. He was like, I'll take care of it for you. In a 45-minute podcast, he drank the entire bottle himself.
Wow.
And then I had a couple other guys on, Chris, you might be listening, who restaurant partners who came in for an evening podcast and wound up drinking through like three of my nice bottles.
Oh my God.
Which I was more than happy to share with them. But
of course,
towards the end of this 2.5 hour podcast, the one partner was like punching the other one.
Oh my God. You got all that recorded too.
For their benefit, I didn't release the entire whole footage.
Wow. But, that's funny.
So yeah, we can drink up and I don't think we're going to cross either of those.
No, cheers. Yeah, it's a sipper. I mean, it's what we, like I said, we wanted something well balanced. And
yeah,
I also think that, you know, with our mezcal, I mean, I think one of the things we love, we do a lot of like tequila mezcal festivals in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and, you know, different pop-ups and tastings. And, you know, we hear it all. We have people that come up and say, oh, I love mezcal. Let's try it. Oh, yours is the best, you know. Hmm. And then we have other people that are like, oh, I don't like mezcal. It's too smoky. And we love hearing those people because we love to say, well, just give it a try, you know. I think there are a lot of mezcals out there that really do hit you in the face hard with the smoke. It's just like right off the bat, boom, here's the smoke. I think, and open to your opinion as well, but I think with ours, you know, it's a little bit more subtle with the smoke right hitting you in the face. It's a little bit... You know, it's a little bit more fruit forward. It's a little bit peppery. Mm-hmm. And then when you kind of like breathe out your nose and kind of, you know, in your throat, then you get the smokiness there, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's a mezcal. It's going to be smoky, but I don't think it's as campfire, you know, like everybody thinks. But, you know, in the cocktails, it's great because then you take that sip of the cocktail and you get it just subtly on the back. And it's just, you know, it just adds such a different flavor profile to, you know, some amazing cocktails right now. I always tell people, I challenge you to go to any legit cocktail bar throughout the United States and find a menu that does not have a mezcal cocktail on it, you know. And it's, you know, it's, I mean, look at tequila 10 years ago. I mean, tequila was still shooting and, you know, shots and, you know, margaritas and that was it, you know, where now there's so many, you know, like you said, there are a lot of tequilas out there that, you know, have a lot of additives and stuff, but there's also some really solid ones that are just great for sipping and, you know, really good. And I think mezcal is heading in that direction for sure. It's just, you know, it's behind tequila, but 5 years from now, I think we're having a totally different conversation. You know, I think it's a lot more popular, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, too, as a mezcal fan, I mean, I've had awful mezcals, you know, and there's different reasons why, you know, I've had some that taste like burnt plastic or something, some really bad ones. But I've had some phenomenal ones. So, we just want people to know, like, you know, we want people to be able to try the ones that are the way mezcal should be represented by these good mezcals, because I think it could change their minds if they did have, like, their first experience was, I'm not going to drop names, but, you know, I know some of the commercial brands that they're not very good, and if that's... For most people, I would say in the U.S., Americans, generally speaking, we kind of follow trends, and, like, we don't really know. It's like, oh, yeah, let me go get the... Because everybody... Because, you know, it's on the new rap video or whatever, and that may not be the best representation of mezcal. I think mezcal is very volatile in that way because, you know, like, again, you know, we've had amazing ones, and we love to try, you know, we still try other brands.
Oh, that's like one of our things. We'll go into bars, and we always love to try, like, oh, let's try that. And we have a lot of favorites. We love Madre. We love Pere de Almas. I mean, there's, like, some phenomenal mezcals out there that that's what got us into the business in the first place, was tasting some amazing mezcals. So they're out there, you know. It's just, you know, there's a couple that, you know, just, you know, it is what it is, you know.
He's like, drop the names. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, you know, 90% of the time, I would say, I mean, maybe not 100% of the time, but 90% of the time, like, the celebrity, you know, brands out there, like, you're not, you know, I mean, who knows what their process is, you know. From their marketing process to their, you know, the real life process. But, you know, a lot of it, I think, is just kind of like a quick grab, you know, grab for, you know, money or whatever the case is.
Yeah, one of our favorite hashtags is we are not paid actors, you know? I mean, it's just, you know, it is what it is, you know?
Yeah. It's so difficult. I mean, I can't imagine what the regulatory process is to, like, have something that's produced in Mexico and then imported over, you know, even if it's just to Los Angeles, that then gets distributed. You know, how much more thorough that process probably is for you all as a company. You know, I think, like, I started a coffee company, Good Buddy Coffee.
Okay.
It's incredibly simple. I found the coffee roaster in town that does the best job, and I bought their beans, and I put it in my bag with my label, and that was it.
Wow. You know? It's where do the beans come from? Where do their
Peaks Coffee in Syracuse?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sam, who's the head roaster and co-owner, just really phenomenal coffee. Skytop Coffee in Manlius is without question the best in Central New York. They send pretty much all of their roasts out to be graded professionally from like the national whatever that grading you know society is. And they most of them come back in like the high 90s. Mm-hmm. And they get really, really, really intense with their, they offer some, I don't know enough about them to speak on, except I've bought a couple, but they'll offer really expensive pour overs of like hard to get beans. And so I was just out there a couple weeks ago and had this, I forget what region it was from, but this Mexican bean, they only offer as a pour over, but it's a $22 cup of coffee.
Wow.
You know, and they only offer it as a pour over. So, so they're definitely the best, highest quality in Syracuse, but Sam at Peaks makes some of my favorite coffee. And so I just, that was one of my COVID projects. I had a lot of COVID projects.
Of
one
course.
Of them was backyard chickens. We were chicken farmers for a little bit. I was a chicken farmer for a little bit. And then this call, I was sitting at my nephew's like second birthday party scrolling on my phone, and I got hit for, I think it's called the Boy and a Bear coffee out of Los Angeles.
Hmm.
And I got hit with a Facebook ad for them, and I was like, I was hooked. It just the packaging, the logo, like their whole vibe. I was like, okay, I'm going to buy two bags. I had no idea what it tasted like. I paid $40 for two bags of coffee.
Yeah.
And then after I placed the order, the bell went off. It was like, well, if I fell for this, like if I can get hooked on not knowing anything about this company, but if I can get hooked on the packaging and the vibe of, you know, their aesthetic, I wonder if I could start a company that does, you know, a coffee company that does that. So, so immediately I text Sam, I was like, if someone was going to buy coffee beans from you, you know, how much would it cost? And they're just, it's incredibly cheap. You know,
yeah.
It's like you're paying, I mean, I don't know what it is today, cause I know coffee's gone up astronomically over the past, you know, couple years since COVID.
Did you tell him what you were going to do with it? I mean, was that,
yeah.
Was there like a conflict of interest in that? Or like, was he
no.
just.
No. So, you know, with the Eat Local card, you know, and Peaks is on the Eat Local card. I was really, it's like I'm not going to wholesale to anybody in Syracuse, like in your area, which is the hardest part because it's incredibly difficult to sell a retail bag of coffee. I think even nowadays, because you know, by the time I spent the packaging on the label almost costs as much as the coffee beans themselves, which is crazy,
right?
Unless you're buying, you know, hundreds of thousands of them at a time, so. Buying, you know, so the packaging and the label, I'm like now I'm at my cost is $6 basically for a pound of coffee. And that's whole bean. Forget if, you know, buying a commercial grinder and 95% of the people want their coffee ground, which immediately you're losing all of your flavor and, you know, most of your flavor when you're sending out pre-ground coffee. So, so then buying the grinder and all that kind of stuff. So, now I'm at like $6 for a pound. If I sell it retail, you're just over the point of shipping can go from like $2 to $8.
Yep.
Well, now if I'm including shipping and I'm selling it for $14, I'm out like a quarter, you know? So now I'm paying you to order coffee from me. But there's not many people, especially in this area, who are willing to spend $14 for a bag of coffee and another $8 to have it sent to their house.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big challenge. But wholesale, on the other hand, there's a pretty decent margin in the wholesale coffee game. Again, I don't know. I know price. Everybody's talking about prices have gone crazy. But if you're talking about like a run-of-the-mill Brazilian coffee bean, and, you know, especially if you're like a medium, well, I guess the roast doesn't really matter, but, you know, nice middle of the road Brazilian coffee bean, medium roast, at least back when I was in coffee, you know, 6 years ago, I don't know, $2.90 a pound maybe roasted. So you could go out there and wholesale 5 pound bags that would sell to restaurants and whatnot for like $60.
Yeah.
And your profit margin's exceptional.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it would be really easy for me to go out there and do it all over again and just focus on wholesale. But I'd be, I've got eight coffee companies in Syracuse that are on the Eat Local card, you know, or wow. Central New York. Yeah. So I can't really go out there and be like, hey, I'm happy to promote you and help you get business. By the way, I'm going to go try and actively compete against you in the wholesale world. So I ran some Facebook ads, you know, I never really put too much effort as was required, but none of those things, you know, if there's one, I'm 37 years old. That's fucking crazy. I'm 37 years old.
I know. It's when you say it out loud.
Yeah. If there's one thing I've learned, it's that very few things in this life, are quick ways to make money, you know,
yeah.
unless you're, you know, selling drugs or, you know,
right.
a hitman or something like that.
It takes
that,
time. Yeah.
Right?
You got to plant the seed and yeah. water it and, you know, let it grow for
right.
sure. Yeah.
I mean, how long has it been from when you all had the conversation in your car to today?
So it was about 7 or 8 years. Been, or
yeah.
Almost
yeah.
seven.
We started the LLC 2017. That's when we actually made the LLC. So the process was years before yeah. that, mm-hmm. all the tasting and the
yeah, traveling to Oaxaca. And then obviously you throw COVID in the mix, just like everybody else. I mean, yeah. everything was delayed. So, but we actually put the product on the market about a year and a half ago. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. About a year and a half ago.
Wow.
So
it took a long time. You know, there's a lot of like, you know, we didn't have anybody to hold our hand to mm-hmm. tell us what to do. So
yep.
a lot of licenses, you mm-hmm. know, trying to figure out, do you go with the distributor? Do you do it yourself? All these questions.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking about, well, if you do it this way, you know, you're thinking about the money and all these things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a lot of licenses. So all that just kind of took time, bumped our head a few times, you know,
yeah.
made some mistakes.
You make some mistakes. I mean, that's part of having your own business, right? I mean, you make some mistakes, but you learn from it. And as long as you learn from it and move forward, you know, and just keep an open mind with everything and just keep grinding. I mean, we're, you know, bootstrapping it, you know, just, go. I mean, a typical day sometimes in Los Angeles is, you know, we'll pick an area of town and say Santa Monica or Venice or Silver Lake, and him and I will, you know, meet up and, you know, we're just walking into bars and restaurants while people are doing inventory and just, you know, bring the bottle, a couple cups, you know, and just start conversation. And, you know, you get all types of reactions. You get some people that are like, oh, no, we're good, you know, even though they don't want to try it.
Mm-hmm.
Other people try it. Wow, I love it. What are we going to do? You know, other people like, wow, this is phenomenal. I'll buy a case right now. You have it in your car? Yeah, we do, you know, so.
That's great.
You know, that's how we just, you know, and a lot of networking. I mean,
yeah.
I'm a huge fan. I mean, I just love networking. I love mm-hmm. connecting people. I love connecting with people. And, you know, our years as mixologists at the Marriott and Ritz-Carlton, you know, right in downtown LA Live, the beauty about that was, you know, a lot of managers and beverage directors and those types of people, you know, come in, they work for 2 years, and then they go to the next property, and then they go to the next thing. It's always the next best property.
Yeah.
So when we came out with this, we did have, fortunately, we had a lot of good people on our side who said, yeah, we'll give you a shot. You know, let's you know, I'm at this bar, I'm at this restaurant, we'll give you a shot, which is always nice. It's cool. The best feeling is when they reorder, you know, because at first it's always like, yeah, I know you. We'll give it a shot. Let me buy a case. Okay. But they could buy a case and it might not even move.
Yeah.
Or it could just sit there, or maybe people don't like it and then you never hear from them again. But I think our retention rate, like having people call us up, wow, people loved it. We want another case. We want two more cases. Let's put it on the cocktail menu. That has been amazing for us. Like that's such a good feeling because we know that people love the product.
Yeah, and for sure.
That's been really great.
Yeah. I've got a buddy who, Trey, who's from originally from Buffalo, but he sort of a similar, like he just moved out to Los Angeles after college and, you know, packed up everything he could fit in his car. And I think he had like $200 to his name. And he got out there and he wound up getting a job at the Beverly Hills Hilton as a bartender there and was there for, I don't know, I think 3 or 4 years maybe.
Yeah.
And maybe to his detriment, the former CEO of Metro Mattress, you know, here in town, was out there staying at the Beverly Hills Hilton vacation with his family, and Trey was his like personal bartender for his whole visit.
Oh, cool!
And at the end of his stay, he said, you know, they had gotten to know each other over the week, and so he said, you know, if you ever move back home, let me know. Here's my card. I'll have a job for you. And unfortunately, Trey moved back. I'm sure he loves it now, but you know, he moved back here to upstate New York and we got a job at Metro Mattress. But yeah, I mean, when he was out in LA, you know, he was bartending at like Elton John's Grammy party. Craziest.
I mean,
we saw some
pretty
like that.
Yeah. I mean, Lakers championships. We were right across the street from the Staples Center.
Kings,
now crypto,
Lakers
but
championships.
Yeah, love yeah. the Kings hockey, two of them.
ESPYs,
Lakers
awards, all that. Hmm. I mean, we've seen probably every athlete.
VMAs. Yeah, we used to. Yeah, you'd be at the bar, you'd be have your head down, and somebody would be like, I get two shots of tequila. You look up, it's Matthew McConaughey, you know. It's just, I mean, Tom Brady in there getting drinks, you know. I mean,
Too short.
Suge Knight. I mean, it was, yeah, I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, it was, I wouldn't change anything. I mean, it was the people I met, including him. I mean, we would never have met if we didn't have that job there.
Yeah.
But yeah, the people we met and the connections we had from there, I mean, it's just, it was, you know, just everything was meant to be, you know, yeah, and it kind of led us to this point. And I just remember the days of him and I behind the bar sitting there like, I mean, as much as we love mixology and creating cocktails and watching people smile after take a sip, it's also bartending at the end of the day, you know, and you know, you're dealing with a lot of different personalities and, you know, there's long shifts and, you know, we both had photography careers that we were doing simultaneously and, you know, you're working and then going to editing at home and stuff like that. But there was many talks that him and I would have behind the bar when it was dead, and we would just be like, "Man, we need something else needs to happen. You know, yeah. we need to make some moves. You know, and it just how the trip to Mexico City and then coming back and the idea to do the mezcal and then to really like, you know, when we first came back and told people our fellow bartenders like we're gonna make a mezcal. You know, you almost saw them kind of like, yeah, cool, that's a great idea. You know, like good luck. You know.
Yeah.
And like that just fueled us. We were like, okay, you know, you'll see one day, you know. And like the full circle moment is now, you know, that bar that, you know, we worked at for each of us 9 years, you know, they're carrying it now.
Yeah. That's
so
cool.
it's really a, and cool. Like now we go there and do kind of staff educations with some of the people that we used to work with and it's, and that we get all love. I mean, it's all love, you know, they're like, wow, you guys said it and you did it.
That's awesome.
You know, so it's a great feeling and we're far from, you know, being accomplished and, you know, but it's the road, it's in the right direction. You know, I mean, we're doing really well and, you know, we're excited.
And there was a time, and we're still, like you said, progressing and learning. But there was like a period where it was taking probably longer than we hoped or thought. And then it was like, you know, do you guys got your mezcal yet? And it was like, not yet. Like, you know, and it was like, there was like a good, probably like a good couple, 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you get that question. And like, we always knew inside we believed it. We knew it was going to happen. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, we didn't know it was going to take a little bit longer, COVID, all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just kept getting that, you know, maybe that's our fault for opening our mouth. I don't know.
We were excited, you know. But we would be, you know, we'd be like smuggling like Coke liter bottles, clear Coke liter of like the mezcal from Oaxaca, you know, back into the States. And then like, we're like, well, we don't have it out yet, but this is it. Like, you want to try it? You know, like we're pouring it out of like a giant 2 liter Coke bottle.
That's awesome.
You know, so it was... you know, but then to like the process, you know, then like finding the bottle and like creating the labels and everything like that. And then, you know, even to this day, walking into a place and seeing it sit on the shelf is, I mean, you know, I started bartending when I was 17 years old here in Syracuse at the Phantom Club and you know, Tom Taylor and, you know, he was a great bar owner and, you know, kind of took me under his wing and, you know, I learned so much. And I remember one of my favorite things to do behind the bar when it was dead was I just would pick up bottles and look at them and read them and, you know, try to learn about it. I was very interested in it. And it's just, it's crazy now, you know, years later, you know, going back and then now walking to bars and seeing the bottle there. It's a trip.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if there's one thing I learned from, you know, my short time behind the bar, it's like, you have to have a story of whatever it is you're selling. If it's the cocktail, if it's the beer, if it's the wine, if you have the story, you know, behind it. And so, you can pretty much move it to anybody. And so that's what's important about, you know, the companies today is to have that story of whatever, how it's made, you know, the importance of it, the quality of it, you know, whatever the case is. The most expensive, there's a company, a brewery here in Syracuse, Underground Beer Lab, makes some of the best beers in Syracuse without question. Incredibly small batch, small brewery. And I would go to order from them like maybe once a week. And it's like, hey, can I get two? No, you can have one case of this week and that's it. And it was expensive. You know, it'd be like $9 for a can, which around here is, you know, in the upper tier of you know, an IPA.
Yeah.
And people would always flinch at the price. And I'd say, but that's the hardest to get beer that you're going to get. Like, you're probably not going to see that can, you know, in a week.
Yeah.
Anywhere. And people would be like, oh, really? And they'd jump on it. you know. That or smoking a cocktail is what I learned. If you want to sell cocktails, just smoke an old fashioned, and you'll have about 10 people follow up behind that person.
Absolutely.
Well, they like, love the process. They love watching it. You know, they love watching the show. Yeah. It's, I mean, exactly what you said. Like people see, they see something going by with a cool garnish or a great color, and it's like, I want that, whatever that is. You know,
right.
I mean, that's how we are, you know, as society. It's just, you know.
Yeah. Is the world of, I mean, I know like New York City mixology, you know, it's like fat washing is, you know, in a whole variety of ways and different spirits and methods is like the biggest thing right now. And that's not the case here in Syracuse. Maybe there's one or maybe two bars that are doing it. Is that the case in LA? Is it like high fat washing or is it more like what is the cocktail
scene?
A lot of shrubs,
you know, a lot of different, you know, local, you know, fresh ingredients. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's, you know, obviously you got a lot of tequilas, a lot of mezcals, but
people make their own syrups.
You know, it's, you see some fun stuff. I mean, we sponsored last year, like a mixology contest and, you know, it's cool to kind of see, you know, it's again, as ex mixologists behind the bar, we, even when we go into restaurants and bars, we do have, I mean, I love coming up with new cocktails, especially, you know, even for like Elephant and the Dove, you know, I was like, here's like 12 cocktails that I think would be really good that are efficient for people to make on a busy Saturday night, but still flavorful and, you know, with some fun new ingredients.
Yeah.
But we never go into a place and we kind of read the room and kind of, you know, talk to the bar managers. We never go in and say, these are the cocktails you have to do. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's the opposite. We actually love to see what mixologists come up with. There's so many creative young minds out there who are really trying to expand and come up with just funky, cool stuff that really goes with a lot of these spirits. And you know, and we love to see what people do with it. You know, if they come to us and say, hey, you know, like our bartenders aren't really into that, but like, can you come up with some ideas for us? Absolutely. You know, we'll do whatever you need. And we love to do that.
Yeah.
But we love to kind of throw that ball in their court and see what, you know, what they come up with, because you see some cool stuff that I never even think of, you know, and it's, you know, and especially with the food scene these days and the, just how like the culinary aspect of food, you know, just with culinary and mixology, how they're really coming together over the last few years. You know, it's awesome just to see, you know, pairing things and different foods with this and, you know, just coming up with ideas and different syrups and different ingredients and different shrubs that you just never would think of, you know.
That's cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but tell everybody who's listening where they can find, you know, your mezcal here in Syracuse or upstate New York. And then if they can't find, if not in the restaurant, how can they buy a bottle themselves?
Yeah, so we're in Torchwood Spirits out on 31. And that right now is the there. And I think that's the only liquor store that has it right now at the moment. We're talking to a couple other ones. But there are, as far as outside of Syracuse, you know, you can buy it on our website, doscabachos.com, and it could ship direct to your door, direct to consumer. And then anywhere outside of there, especially California, we're in, if people are familiar with Total Wine and More, we're in 12 of those locations throughout SoCal. They're a nationwide company, store. Mm-hmm. Eventually it could be nice to, you know, get into some of those locations, but we're also trying not to spread ourselves too thin. You know, obviously being here in upstate New York is important to me.
Yeah.
That means a lot to me, as, you know, being in, you know, Northern California for David, cause that's where he's from, you know, is important to him because these are places we grew up and, you know, we want to share that with, you know, our friends and family who are around. So upstate New York was very important to me. You can find it at some local restaurants. We're in Possibilities. We're in Daniela Steakhouse. We're in Alto Cinco. We're in Exo Taco, Elephant and the Dove, and Persimmons in Clay. Drumlin's Golf Course.
Where's Liquortown?
Liquortown out in Brewerton. So we're in some spots and, you know, again, trying to find the right, you know, the right fit for it. You know, it's definitely more cocktail forward, craft cocktail forward places that are really looking to, you know, work with some different mezcals. So,
yeah,
you know, there's definitely some locations you can go and you can try it, and then you can buy it through our website or go to Torchwood and, you know, pick up a bottle, or Liquortown and pick up a bottle. But yeah,
if somebody did want a bottle and it's not accessible, because we ship to like most of the states. There's only a couple states we don't, but 20 off DG code, 20% off.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. For the show. Sweet. Yeah. 20 off 20OFF DG.
Okay, cool.
20% off. They do, you know, when you ship liquor, they, you know, there is a.
Yeah. It ends up being a little bit pricier.
But the 20% off, that kind of, that helps with that, that helps a little bit.
Yeah, that's great. Awesome. Well, I'll put links in the show notes and everything for anybody who's listening to go find the website or social media links, all that kind of stuff. But so make sure you go check them out. And if you want to try it, hit up the restaurants that they mentioned, their liquor stores. And thanks, guys. Appreciate
you
coming in.
Thanks. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
This was great, man.
Well, there it is, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Eat Local New York podcast. Again, huge shout out and thanks to our sponsors at Brown Carbonic. You can reach them online at browncarbonic.com or via phone at 315-454-3591. Visit us online at eatlocalnewyork.com to stay up to date with everything we're doing. We're going to catch you back here next week for a brand new episode of the Eat Local New York podcast.